Welcome to Church Sound Podcast. I'm your host, Samantha.
I'm James.
And I'm Gary.
We're audio engineers, authors, and educators.
With a special focus on houses of worship.
On this episode, Returning to the Music.
All right, first up, as usual, sponsor messages. So, Electro Voice, who have been a leader in church sound since the beginning, and today offer the industry's largest portfolio of loudspeaker system solutions for houses of worship of all sizes. Elevate the audio experience with Electro Voice.
We also want to thank Digico. Their new Quantum 225 and other House of Worship solutions are available at digico.biz.
Oh, what's that one?
It's a different one.
It's a different set of numbers, yeah. Oh, well, welcome back, guys. Good to keep talking to you.
Same. Good to hear your voice.
This one's going to be like, so we really enjoy getting mad nerdy, like on this podcast, like focusing on the tech. Like, it's just fun. Like, it's, you know, the tools of the trade, and we can't help ourselves.
There's a narrower set of people that we can do that with.
Right. Yeah. People. Yeah. When you speak the same kind of language with other people, you kind of want to use that language. So, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, maybe it's time we, you know, maybe took a little breather to talk about music, maybe.
I'm down.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, it's all about the music, right?
I believe it, anybody who argues against that is in the wrong podcast. So, yeah, I think if you think about it, like without the music, I think like these jobs would kind of stink, right? Like nobody would want to be an audio engineer if there wasn't music. Nope. I mean, there would be a couple people, right? But nobody would be like, oh, I can't wait to mix that talking head, that I can't wait to mix that boardroom. This is going to be insane. Like nobody's really doing that. And so we're all intentionally otherwise, like we are humans. So we love music. Music is big because we're like, it is a part of us and we are a part of it. So you can't help it. Like it is what it is. So that's what sort of makes it kind of particularly emotional. Yeah. Especially when we're mixing front of house. I think if you mix monitors, you have a very different relationship to it. But distinctively with front of house, you're changing the way that the audience is experiencing the music. So we've got a big influence over it. So I think first up, you know, how do you guys keep your eye on the prize, so to speak? When we're mixing, how do you stop from letting all the fluff and the tech stuff like get in your way? And how do you focus in on that?
Yeah, that's a great, I mean, that's obviously a challenge because, like you said, we're super nerdy. We love to get lost in the tech. And I find myself, I get in trouble when I mix, when I get focused on, ooh, I want my reverb to sound just like this, or I want to nail this delay, or, you know, that type of stuff. The longer I've been mixing, I realize the less I touch the desk during a performance. Or a worship service, during practice and so forth, I'm all about, you know, sweeping, finding, getting everything set. But once I get my mix kind of down and nailed, I want to be in that moment and I want to experience hopefully what the audience or the congregation is experiencing and just add to that and, create an experience or be a part of the experience that's happening, you know, with the musicians and with the congregation that's singing along. You know, it used to be I was so worried about all the tech stuff and I was constantly messing with stuff on the board and I would find myself always digging myself in a hole somewhere or missing something like, oh, hey, there was a guitar solo that went by that I didn't even pay attention. I was so worried about how the snare drum sounded, you know, or whatever. And so now for me, that's all rehearsal time and let's get it together at rehearsal. But when I'm actually mixing the service or the concert or the event or whatever it is, I want to be part of that experience. I want to be engaged in that experience. I want to be feeling, loving, and enjoying the music as hopefully the congregation or the audience is.
What about you, James?
I took this from Mike Sessler's blog from a long time ago, but I try to like divide up my sound check into technical mixing and then musical mixing. And if at all possible, I'm going to try to get as much of that technical mixing stuff done as fast as I can so that I can get to the musical mixing part.
Yes.
Because as soon as I'm able to know, okay, what's this transition from the verse to the chorus, or what instrument do I need to highlight for this song versus that song, so that I'm mixing proactively instead of reactively. That's when I feel like I'm in the zone. And, you know, like, you know, some productivity people call the flow state or whatever. Like when you're like just in it and you're not thinking about the stuff, you're just like in the moment doing your job to present the music the way that it should feel. That's really what I'm after with my rehearsal stuff. So, you know, starting with a bass scene, to make sure that as much of that technical stuff is already set up before we start, so that I can really just get to how do I make this music feel the way that it should. And again, like, yes, I care about the tone of the snare drum. I care about the tone of the bass guitar, but I want to like not get too myopic and get the big picture so that I can be like, okay, how does this feel for somebody that's just walking in? Like I've heard it through, you know, rehearsal and sound check and all these different, you know, elements. If I had fresh ears right now, what would it feel like? And what would it, you know, like, how would it immerse the person that's walking in, you know, maybe in the middle of the first song? Or how would it feel for somebody that was, you know, there and we're starting, we're like, how do I get those transitions just right between the sections? More than just like hitting cues, it's how do I make this feel the way that it should at the dynamic that we should be at right now? So those are the things that I'm thinking about in like making that transition of like, I want to make this a musical mix, not just each element sounding good on its own, or even my, you know, my reverb and delay and stuff. I care about those things, but they have to make it feel a certain way. And I'm chasing those feelings. Which sounds kind of meta, but yeah, we're trying to make it like so that people can engage in their emotions. You know, they can be in a beautiful atmosphere to put their eyes on something transcendent more than just, you know, the, you know, it doesn't need to sound like the radio that they played on the way to church. It needs to have something that's taking their eyes beyond what the physical realm can contain even. But we're doing that and kind of creating that on-ramp from where we are in our thinking brain to using our feelings to transcend to what's going on in the spiritual world.
How do you guys like divide where the technical mixing ends and the musical mixing begins?
Yeah, I tell you, I want to get my, and you said it very well, James, or I guess Mike Sessler said it and then you said it again, but I want to get my technical mixing done at soundcheck / rehearsal. And that's my experimenting time. That's, you know, I'm doing different things and all of that. And so when we get to the actual event, whether that's a worship service or a concert, or, you know, whatever that event is, I am now, just pretty much mixing musically. You know, I do not want to get heavy in the technical aspects of it, unless, you know, obviously something happens. Like I had this happen to me a while ago where the electronic drum brain just stopped and I had no drums and we're in this big piece and I'm like, okay, bass guitar, rhythm guitar, here we go. You know, you guys are now, you know, you're not carrying it. Synth pad. I remember I went down to the synth pad and added like 10 dB at 100 Hertz. So it was just big and fat. You know, I just need something down at the, you know, and it became technical, you know, at that point, but it became technical because it had to, because something happened. When I'm mixing, I would much rather be out of that, you know, the technical aspect of it.
What about you, James?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just itching to get to that point as soon as possible. You know, the way that I try to get there that quick is making sure that my setups are consistent, making sure that my bass scene is going to work for most people. You know, I check gain. I check to make sure, you know, nothing's funky on some EQ that doesn't need to be there. I'm looking for clarity. And it's kind of as soon as my vocals are clear and my drums are big, then I hate to say it, but my instruments kind of take kind of a back seat. They don't have to be perfection every time. And I'm just like, I like to lean on musicians being professional to get good sounds to send to me. And so, you know, I'm trying to do it as fast as possible. But as soon as I've got clear vocals, I've got good gain structure, and everything's kind of working, that's when I take my eyes off the meters and I put my eyes on the, you know, the set list. I'm making notes as to, you know, what's happening when, and, you know, so that I can be proactive and, you know, having the fader up before they sing that line. If they're switching, you know, who's singing lead vocal, or if there's a guitar melody, you know, I want to have it up, you know, a hair before they start, so that it keeps everybody's interest, you know, all those things. So I'm really racing to do that so that I can spend most of my time in musical mixing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. That is really good. The thing that I've started using more and more now is snapshots and scenes, because, you know, the digital boards offer us that. And so I try to get a lot of my technical stuff in rehearsal and then save that scene. So when we go from song to song, I can, you know, just have it automatically, you know, recall for me, you know, things like who's lead vocal on this, you know, that type of stuff, and what effects I'm using and all of that. Again, so I don't have to worry about those technical things, you know, when I'm actually mixing.
Yeah, my like line between technical mixing and musical mixing is like super blurred, because I had lived so much in the technical points of it. Like, to me, the technical bits and pieces are like the obligatory stuff of like, I'm going to use this many groups. This is going to be, you know, for the kick and the bass. This is going to be for the rest of the drum kit. This is going to be for the guitar. This is going to be whatever. Setting that up, like getting the actual structure of my scene set up. And of course, like, you know, gain staging and all that other stuff. But then like, for me, the line is, as soon as I start talking about throwing faders of any kind, like that becomes mixing. Me adjusting the compressor is the musical mixing for me, because it's all like, you know, it's 10,000 tiny moves. So I have a much harder time saying, oh, well, you know, if I play with a gate, then that's technical. But if I play with the EQ, that's musical. You know, like it's a lot more blurred than that.
Yeah, it's really about creating the experience. You know, if you step back, why do people come to the worship service?
Right.
They're there. And I always say, and I actually got this from, I watched a video on Bon Iver's tour from a number of years ago when he first did, you know, kind of the surround sound thing. And he had made this great immersive experience with lighting and with sound. And his front of house guy said, people come here for a corporate experience. They're not sitting at home listening to music. They come here for this corporate. And I thought, boy, that is church. We come because we want this corporate experience together. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I want my mixing to do. And how can I create that environment so we can have this experience all together, the shared experience that is unique. It's different. It's not sitting at home watching it on TV. It's not putting my headphones on listening to music, but I'm here. I'm in this room. I'm around fellow believers, and we are all having this experience together. And that's a very emotional response and a very emotional thing.
The use of the word corporate was super interesting to me, because when you first said it, I was like, my first thought was, when I heard corporate, it was sterile. But then I understood as she kept going. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Like a communal sort of experience.
Maybe it's communal versus corporate. Yeah, probably.
I'm not against the word corporate. But, like, yeah. I kind of like it. I was just sort of like letting it wash over me. Maybe this is kind of a core. It's sort of like, but I think you're totally right, Gary. Like, it is a little bit corporate in that there are segments of it that are quite regimented or that are quite, like, very intentional. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. we start every service doing these three things. Halfway through, we're going to do, you know, the Great Thanksgiving, and then we're going to end with this. Like, they just do that every single time. So that part of it, like, to me, that can't, I could see that being sort of the corporate part of it. And then this, coming together, the teamwork, the community, the commune, the congregation mm-hmm. of that sort of like corporate word. Like, that is with it as well. So, like, yeah, I'm going for it, and I start using it.
I love how you put all that together and made it very, very meaningful and understanding when I meant to say a communal experience and said corporate instead. So you get stars for that, Amantha. That was perfect.
All you have to do is overthink everything all the time, and then yes. the patterns really emerge. Yeah.
And so, we all do that, don't we? Yes.
Yeah. We're talking about music, and you kind of asked the question, Gary, and the whole point of this episode, right, is like getting this idea of like going back to the music. So it's almost, we may not be the right three people to answer this question, but what is worship without the music? I mean, it exists, right? I think we can say, like, right. yeah. It's technically still worship, but especially in the Western world, especially in the U.S., for, you know, every denomination, every branch of organized religion, period, like Western religion as a whole, mm-hmm. like, music is, like, is not everything, but it's, like, super significant, right? Like, yes.
Well, I mean, now we're getting way into the weeds, but, you know, like, you think about, you know, the sacraments, or, you know, like, you're taking communion, or you're, you know, the baptism, like, those things are elements of worship as well. I think this could get really deep and beyond my mental capacity for today. But we've looked at the Psalms, and we've looked at the way that David set up, you know, the tabernacle, and then Solomon, you know, like, built the temple and stuff in the Old Testament. And there's singing involved in exalting God. And that's not by accident, and it's not just like a Western construct, you know, post-Enlightenment. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there are elements that go beyond the music for worship, you know, like obedience, you know, when it's crunch time is worship, you know, the way we order our lives is worship. There's all these different elements to it, but the one of the ways that we do it corporately on not an individual level is through the music. And music has a way of kind of letting us all experience and participate in something all at the same time. You know, there's a great book by Daniel Levitin called This Is Your Brain on Music. And he's like a record producer and neuroscientist.
Wow.
But yeah, crazy stuff. Fascinating topic. But even in like the same part of your brain that processes anticipation and semi-involuntary motor movement in your brainstem is part of the place that processes music. So you like hear 1, 2, 3, and you expect 4 to be in that particular time, and you expect to tap your foot along to it, or like move your body semi-involuntarily to groove to the music. All of that is like how we're created. And when we have music as a corporate expression, and we're using a PA to do it so that we can do beyond kind of what the drum circle could allow us to hear all at the same time, then that's one way where we can all encounter and participate in that thing as a group. You know, we're not alone in it. It's not an individual expression. You know, we're all together, you know, encountering this music and with the lyrics that point toward that particular truth that becomes one facet of corporate worship, but it's one of those ones that we can do it corporately. And there could be, you know, liturgy and corporate readings and things like that. But I would rather do a lot more worship songs than corporate readings personally.
Yeah.
You know, if the entire church service was a bunch of corporate readings, I would be a little less inclined than if there's music.
I think that's a good word. A little less inclined. completely switching gears. Reference tracks.
Okay.
just feel the, just the, I've pushed the shift. I haven't driven a shift in like 15 years, but we're gonna, not a shift car, manual car. Haven't shifted gears in a manual car in 15 years. I've shifted in 15 years. Reference track. So in all of this conversation of keeping our eyes, like remembering the music and why we're together and what it means for us at like the animalistic level, like as at the social level.
Sorry,
at
all. I've been there.
It's true though. Like that's totally true. Keeping that all in mind. And we're trying to sort of bring that every week. One, that's kind of a big responsibility, but I don't think anybody should put too much pressure on themselves about it. But then to the point of my question is, how do we know what to refer to? You know, James and I, we've talked about reference tracks tons of times on here, but either one of us said it either this episode earlier or in the last episode about not, we have to like listen to stuff, right? We all have different types of music that we listen to, and they all have an influence over how we mix things. So what do we, how do we even establish a target to even mix towards, to reach that goal of, you know, of community?
Yeah. You know, so this is just kind of my routine, if you will. On the weeks that I know that I'm mixing, the churches I work with, we all use Planning Center. So all the tracks are out there to listen to. And that becomes my first reference, is what was the original artist or what recording has the worship leader put out on, you know, Planning Center that they're referencing, giving to all the other musicians, you know, to listen to and say, hey, here's a song, you know, obviously you've got the charts and everything else to go with it, but here's the recording that I'm putting out there that we're, you know, referencing or doing, because it's by this artist. Because with a lot of modern worship songs, there might be three or four artists that have done a recording. Mm-hmm. So that's my first go-to, is I go and I listen, and we talked about technical versus, you know, emotional. It's almost that same process where I'll listen to it two or three times, very technical. What's the snare drum sound like? What does, you know, this sound like? And that kind of becomes, you know, my reference. And then I'll go through the rest of the week and I'll just listen to it on more of an emotional level. What does this feel like? What is this song? You know, what am I feeling at different points in the song? How can I, you know, use what this recording has, and how can I, you know, incorporate that into my mix that I'm going to do on Sunday? So, you know, one of the first times I mixed at a church, one of the, I think it was the guitar player said, you know, man, I've been working all week trying to practice on the song. I'm having a hard time nailing this, you know, lead part and so forth. He goes, must be nice to, you know, just be the sound guy and you don't have to practice. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute, you know? And so I walked him through that process. I said, yeah, I want, you know, I would expect my guitar player to show up ready, my drummer, my vocalist, everybody to show up ready. So as a sound guy, I want to show up ready. So I've kind of invested that time. And, you know, thankfully the churches that, you know, I've mixed it with and worked for, all the worship leaders have gone through that effort to say, hey, you know, we happen to like the Hillsong version of this song. And so he's put it out, you know, in Planning Center. And I'll even will go through and, sometimes listen to the guide track just so I know exactly what the musicians are hearing. So, you know, not just the click, 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 but, you know, chorus. Okay. So here's this chorus. So I have some reference points in my head that I can, you know, know, okay, when we come to the chorus, this gets big. And actually that synth pad gets really fat here. And I want to make sure that I'm, you know, doing that as well, because again, I feel like the person that organized and put this together, that's what he is, you know, or she is wanting to have us experience on a Sunday morning. So I'm a big fan of listening to, you know, what you're going to do on Sunday and knowing the song well.
I think the way that I take it is when I'm listening to a song and I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's important to the worship leader in this arrangement? The mm-hmm. first thing I'm trying to figure out is what's the primary instrument, kind of what's the main mid-range instrument that needs to fill up the most space. Or another way to think of it is like, if there was no other instruments, which would the worship leader want to be kind of the one that kind of takes the center stage? And then from there, I'm trying to figure out, like, are there any changes that I would need from a static mix? Like, could there be like a male singing the verse and a female singing the chorus? Or does somebody else take the bridge because it's higher and, you know, somebody doesn't quite have the range to do this song? Those are the things that I'm listening for, is like, what changes are going to be there? And then what are the hooks? So if there's something melodic that comes in between, in between the verse and the chorus, and there's something that's like needs to be present right there. Those are the things that I'm like, okay, if I do nothing else, I need to make sure that this is heard in addition to the lead vocal. So, those are that's the short list of what I'm listening to with references to, you know, the tracks that the worship leader is saying, hey, we're going to do this song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yes, we attend rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt. Yes. Yes. You heard me get in my little soapbox of, you know, as a sound person, how are you practicing, mm-hmm. you know, and now we have so many modern tools to help us do that as well. You know, like I had mentioned, you know, before on the previous podcast about having the HD 96 out, and I have a set of tracks that I've recorded because it's so easy to do. And then I can play it back and I can basically mix without the band there. And then I get to experiment. I get to do all that. So not just attending rehearsal, but also practicing yourself, mm-hmm. you know, when you can.
And it was a resounding yes for you too, James.
Right? Yes, absolutely. Like, what else is there to say?
Yeah. I like the comment about the like solo practice and then the rehearsal together, exactly like musicians would. Getting everything kind of set up and rehearsing with virtual sound check, which again, this has been such a game changer for our industry. Yes. Getting that time to like sort of get out some of your general ideas, to be able to like I use it to like get all the newness out of my ear. So like when I first listen to something, I'm like so consumed with all the tiny details and everything's changing. Everything is so new that I can't focus on any one particular thing. It's just constantly like, oh, listen to this and look at that. And where are we going? If I have all this like rehearsal time by myself beforehand, I can sort of like get that out of the way. So then I can really look like into it and see what's happening. And I prefer to not have to do that during rehearsal if I can at all help it. So like any kind of, whether it be like reference tracks or, a multi-track that I've got from other Sundays with a similar band or whatever, just like kind of getting back into the groove of what this particular song looks like and feels like. Then when we go to the rehearsal, as a musician, the pacing of rehearsal makes all the sense in the world. As the audio person, I'm like, golly, this is not how I wish it was going, because I want, you want to be able to just like, go back, just play that one bar again, or just do this again. And instead I have to like verbalize what I need from these human beings of like, can you play just this? When it's just a computer, I could just highlight the region that I want them to play again.
Yes.
But when you do that with rehearsal, I've gotten all the little technical bits and bobs mostly out of the way. I'm doing much more transforming and getting into the music side of it, with hopes that come time for service, I'm not having a hardly a technical thought in my mind. But getting that rehearsal time, you get to know how they perform, right? As musicians, of just how, you know, you can almost sort of like anticipate what they're going to play or how they're going to play something. And you get that kind of time in rehearsal of like, okay, I see what you're doing, or, oh, you like to noodle a lot in between this, so I bet you're going to do that. stuff like that. Or, you know, knowing like, I'm definitely not, you know, you're really bad about, you know, using your mute pedal, so I'll just wait until you're up there. I will not leave you unmuted, kind of deal. But yeah, rehearsal, we all have our weeks, right? Where it's like, oh my gosh, I do not want to go to this. Or it's like an extra day. We have to do stuff. But I think it means so much. The church I've done a lot of mixing at recently has rehearsal. They have it on Thursdays and I'm not there, but then they have another rehearsal before service on Sunday that I am at. And I kind of like yes. that. So they can do all their like really clumsy stuff where they're getting like, you know, how many bars of what they're doing, they can get that down. Then come the pre-service Sunday rehearsal. Again, now we've gotten all the, you know, we've smoothed out some of the bumps and stuff, and now we can sort of get more into the music itself.
Yeah, no, that is fantastic. I have a similar, you know, kind of setup with a church that I mix at, where we do the Sunday morning thing, and that is my time just to make sure I'm dialed in. You know, we've done the pre-work, we've done all of that. As you said, we've gone through the awkwardness of, hey, how are we getting from song A to song B?
Right.
You know, kind of thing. And so Sunday morning is just, it's basically a run through, you know, and there may be a minor fix here or there, but it's just like a dress rehearsal, a dry run that allows you to just, put the polishing, if you will, or the mm-hmm. final touches on what you're doing.
Can you, James, speak a little bit to like connecting with the music? Like, we talked about it a little while ago, but when we're connecting with the music, we've gotten all the, you're like really in the zone, right? How would you describe that for yourself?
For me, it's when all the stuff that bugs me and is distracting has gotten kind of moved out of the way. And then I can kind of just make sure that everything stays in place as the music changes on the faders. And the things that I'm thinking about after I'm kind of in that zone, I'm thinking about singing along with the lyrics. I'm thinking about making sure that the lead vocal is out in front and everybody can participate. I'm scanning the audience to see like, okay, are people engaging? And that's, you know, an early service is not always a, you know, great litmus test of that.
Yeah.
You're like, you can have the most amazing mix and everybody's like, I'm still sleepy.
Yeah.
Spring forward, everybody. and so I'm making sure that what I'm doing is not just like my preference and now I've lost everybody. So I'm making sure that it's connecting with other people, but then I'm also like, I'm trying to get into the moment myself. You know, like if I can get it feeling a certain way, I can get into the moment. That's often when I feel God in profound ways. Is when I'm actually mixing and kind of in that, because I've kind of tailored it to my preferences a little bit. And but then I'm like not bugged by anything. And I'm like, okay, all the stuff that I would change if I wasn't at the controls has already been changed because I'm at the controls. Yeah. And I can engage with it. And then I'm also trying to think about, okay, when the music comes down, how do I make that next section feel right? You know, I tend to use a lot of input channel compression, so then my instruments don't always come down all the way that they need to automatically, like when the drums and bass drop out. So I'm, you know, riding my DCAs down to try to get that gentle moment to feel gentle after the big moment felt big. So yeah, those are the things that I'm thinking about to try to be in the moment and really feel it.
What about you, Gary?
Yeah, you know, a lot of similar things there. I have found that I know when I'm really connected to the music, I will automatically pull my hands off the desk because I almost get this fear of I'm going to mess it up. Like, okay, this is really good. And I just have this, you know, feeling of like, oh, and it's like, no, live in the moment. This feels good. A lot of times when I, on a Sunday morning, I try to mix almost exclusively from DCAs and mm-hmm. my master fader. I've found this different than other engineers. I have guys watch me and they're like, you know, you ride the master a bit. And I'm like, I am riding kind of the ebb and swell. I'm trying to help the dynamics along, if you will, a little bit of the band. And if my mix is solid and my mix is together, I can push 5 or 6 dB on my master and it gets really big and, you know, and it feels great. And then when it comes down, oh, this is just this point, you know, quiet point and just the acoustics playing. I don't want the acoustic to be in my face. I almost want it to fade to the background. And even I almost want the vocals to fade to the background a little bit so the congregation can hear and feel themselves singing and being part of, again, this experience we're having together. So I'm not afraid to, you know, ride my master fader sometimes with swings, you know, +6 to maybe even down to -6. So a 12 dB, you know, swing on my master fader. And again, it's all about being in that zone, connecting with the music, connecting with the experience that you're having and how it's being received, you know, by the congregation. Mm.
So then what kind of music do you guys like? Because we've said it has an effect on our mixing, and we try to limit that to a certain point, but like, you know, what are you guys into?
Go ahead, James. I'll let you tackle that. Thank you.
Yes, I will. I'll stumble through all the different things. Yeah, you know, there's a certain amount of pop music that you kind of have to understand to know what's going to connect with a lot of bigger congregations. So, you know, like you hear the sound of what the production's doing. So there's like, you know, there's guilty pleasure music where you're like, you know, listening to like girl pop, you know, like I've gotten into that to kind of know like, okay, what's connecting with that, you know, demographic. You know, there's sometimes when I'm really into gospel or even on, you know, like right now, kind of, well, I'll let y'all in on a little secret. My favorite playlist on Spotify right now is Bill Withers Radio. So awesome. Everything from like yacht rock to Motown and like, you know, just past doo-wop, all that is like in there. And, you know, like for me, it's like, it's got to rotate and it's kind of got to go through seasons where like a year or two ago, it was like Corey Wong and all the funk stuff was like, you know, like front and center for me. So, you know, I try to take a broad survey of, you know, what's working and what's connecting, especially with different types of congregations. You know, of course, there's the CCM stuff that many worship leaders are using those same arrangements. You know, your Bethel Hillsong Elevation kind of stuff. So you have to kind of know like what the sounds are, you know, for all this different, you know, palettes that people might be drawing from, but then also have at least some of the musical, you know, inspiration for like, you know, a couple of the churches, even here in Kansas City that I've done some audio work for, they will take it a lot more, even folk, from some of the same arrangements, you know, so they're shifting things a different way. So even understanding like, okay, my snare drum needs to come a little bit back for this style for it to really fit what genre they're going for. So it's kind of like, you almost have to know what they want before they tell you what they want. And so, you know, having a very broad idea of, you know, of the different ways that the worship leaders might shade toward with their musical preferences is helpful if you're mixing for a bunch of different churches or going and doing training like I do.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to turn it on you first, Samantha, and I'd love to hear what you have to say because I'm still processing this.
Yeah, my style is so heavily skewed 90s R&B. It's like a very large percentage of my yeah. I mean, hey, I listen to so much of that. And then other things like more like recent artists being like Adele and Jasmine Sullivan, who are both like huge. They have huge vocals. Mm. Like that's kind of where I get drawn to. I have appreciations for all sorts of stuff, and being a jazz musician growing up and being in a jazz city, I understand and appreciate that quite a bit. But yeah, I would say like stylistically, especially when it comes to my mixing, it tends to lean in that direction. The sort of like a little bit more vocal heavy with a bigger bottom and like a rhythm drums and bass section. Like the guitars are hardly like in your face with my mixing, unless I'm explicitly trying to mix in a certain style. That's just not how I naturally go towards kind of deal.
Yeah, well, I suppose that leaves me, doesn't it?
You don't have to answer that right now. It's okay.
I tell you this: I had a musician say this to me, and I love this statement. He said, "There's really no bad music. There's just some bad musicians sometimes, you know."
Yeah,
and I do. My variety is so big and so vast. You know, and I'll date myself here by, you know, going back, and I still love sitting down. Like if I sit down and I just want to chill and, you know, listen to music and all that, it will be prog rock is my first thing that I'll go to. You know, I'll pull out the Genesis, Yes, Rush, you know, nice. that type of stuff. That's just part of it's what I grew up with. And I think we all naturally go back to, you know, stuff that you kind of grew up with. So I really like that. And that does influence my mixing style. Sometimes I have to stop myself and go, okay, not every song should have 4 seconds of decay on the snare drum. You know, you know, the snare doesn't have to be this huge, you know, sound. I have yet to recently do a gated snare drum. I used to, you know, like the Phil Collins era of the gated snare and stuff. You know, I've kept myself away from that and try to be true to whatever genre I'm mixing to. But, you know, the influences are there, you know, obviously. So, yeah, you know, my music, style is so broad. If it's good, I like it. You know, that's the best way I'd say it.
I think that's great. That's great. We should all be like exposing ourselves to like new kinds of music and not just like get in a rut. Okay. This is a big question I'm about to ask. So let's put a limit on it and say you get like a minute or less to answer this. Yes. Where do you think the future of specifically worship music is going? What do you think the future of worship music is? And I'm okay going first if you'd like me to.
Please do. Well,
yes, please do.
here's kind of what I'm hoping for and what I think will happen. As many things in life are cyclical, I think we've gotten into a very like super, super clean music. I would like to see, and I hope to see, that the music gets a little bit grungier, a little bit dirtier in for worship music, just like a little bit less polish is maybe the best way to put it, to take maybe like some of the old hymns that we've all enjoyed and sort of treating them with the respect and intent that they were originally written in, with just like a little bit more management of today. Because I think what happened, especially when I was really in the throes of House of Worship stuff, is it was the same like, you know, 20 or 30 songs that were very close in style, all kind of moving along their little carousel. Granted, all the churches were like the same denomination, so that I was kind of asking for it. But, you know, that's what I would hope to see. Is just getting away from the overproduction and just kind of being like, what if this was less pretty? Like it was still, how good can we make it if we avoid that? Bring back 90s grunge in worship, basically.
Nice. Yeah. Or the R&B.
Yeah.
You know, I look at it and my simple answer is, you know, follow the generations or follow the people, because, you know, I grew up and it was, you know, organ in hymns when I was young. And then we got into kind of the Maranatha era. And then we had big choirs and, you know, orchestra and, you know, went through all that. And then we kind of went through the, what I called the rock and roll era. And now we're kind of in this pop rock kind of thing or whatever now. And I think the generation coming up, and part of me is fearful in saying this, but I'm going to love and embrace it. But I think we're going to see a big hip hop influence. Ooh. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of it already. But again, I'm just following, you know, just like for me, following when I was, you know, 25, Maranatha was huge. And, you know, now, you know, that younger generation, as they've grown up and they're coming into the church and they start having an influence and all of that, what's the stuff that's influenced them? And I think hip hop has been a huge influence. I mean, 2 years ago, who would have thought that you'd see Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre do the Super Bowl halftime show? You know, I would have never have, you know, predicted that. And I'm pre hip hop era, but I think that as that age group moves through the church, I think their music style will move through with them.
Yeah. If you want to hear what that sounds like, please tune into Disney Plus to watch Sister Act 2. and there's a sensational final number that is right around what Gary's describing. So,
yes.
James, what about you?
You know, I think worship music has gotten, well, the CCM style has gotten a lot more homogenized. And I see kind of a swing in the other direction from that. So where you might hear more, you know, Maverick City music is kind of bridging that gap between gospel and, you know, white CCM. And, but then you're also seeing artists that are having a little bit more country flair as well. And so I think instead of everything sounding the same in that same kind of like everybody wants to sound like Coldplay, it's now going to start taking and branching off in more directions. And so that's my answer that will satisfy any future reference and be like, oh yeah, he was really right.
I hope you're right because I think the diversity, I don't think God called Christians to be homogenous and be like one thing, you know? And so I think, you know, the music diversity would be fantastic.
Agreed. James, do you mind reading this last bit?
Sure. Hey, if you found this podcast helpful, it would help us a lot to reach more church sound techs if you'd take just a moment and rate and leave a review on this podcast wherever you listen. Just a couple minutes goes a long way to help us reach more church sound techs, worship leaders, and tech directors.
Church Sound Podcast is part of the ProSound Web Podcast Network. I'm Samantha Potter.
I'm James Attaway.
And I'm Gary Zanstra.
Thanks for tuning in and have an amazing service this week.